This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke is here, and we have special guest Dr. Monique Carroll with McKenzie Pediatrics in Springfield. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Glad to be here. My thanks as well for Dr. Carroll joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Ludke, I want to start with you and an update on Lane County's situation. We heard from the state health authority that new coronavirus case numbers seem to be plateauing, but we're still seeing our hospitals very much dealing with this surge. And just yesterday, OHA announced 4 new COVID-related deaths in Lane County. How is the situation looking to you?
Well, it's clearly better than it was a month ago. And we're coming down from that peak that we had in late August, which was anticipated. We weren't certain it was absolutely going to be late August, but we knew it was going to be coming. But the steepness of that curve of coming down is not as steep as we'd like it to be. It's more like a plateau, as you said. But it is coming down. We had peaked around 300 new cases a day. Now we're looking at 150 to 170 a day, which is a big change. But remember, it was only 2 months ago where we had, you know, 24 cases a day. So we're still a far cry from where we were in the wonderful days of May and June of this year.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to the news about boosters, which I know everyone's curious about. But Dr. Carroll, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about what you're seeing in your practice. What are you seeing in your patients in terms of COVID-19 and other concerns related to the pandemic?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say mostly what I'm seeing is well checkups. And I wanted to bring that up because of the pandemic, we definitely did see a delay in children accessing their routine medical care. So annual physicals, usual immunizations, flu vaccines, and things like that. So just a plug that if your child's behind, definitely we want to see you. Mm-hmm. In regards to COVID, you know, we're getting lots and lots of phone calls with COVID concerns. So particularly about, you know, what we would normally think of as like a common cold, so runny nose or cough, and then what the repercussions for that are. You know, do they get their child tested? Do they come into the clinic? Can they go to school? Can they go to daycare? How long do they need to stay home? So I'd say the majority of those, though, are phone calls that we're fielding because children aren't very ill. It's just parents want to do the right thing.
And what do you tell them? I mean, what is the threshold where you think, okay, this might just be the sniffles, or this might be something you need to get tested for, or you need to get medical attention?
Yeah, so for medical attention, you know, that's kind of bread and butter stuff still. So if a child is coughing or having problems breathing or wheezing, you know, someone needs to see them. And it should be their general pediatrician, if at all possible, because we want to keep kids out of the ER. If they're dehydrated, if, you know, they've been ill for, you know, 5 to 7 days and it's not getting better, those are all reasons why they should be seen by a medical professional. Thankfully, to most of the daycare organizations and the school districts, they've been very good about notifying parents about what their rules are about when their child can come to school and when they can't. And so that's helped us a lot. So for us, if they are in daycare or if they are in school, you know, generally parents are calling saying, my child has these symptoms. These are the requirements for them to go back to school. And then we help them, you know, access testing or be seen or see what they need in order to get back to their daily life.
And kids are, you know, a lot of kids are back at school for the most part and wearing masks all day and, you know, doing all the things that they need to do to stay safe. Do you hear anything about kids feeling uncomfortable with that, or are there strategies you offer for kids to feel like, you know, doing all the, like, in terms of following the rules and why those rules are and helping them kind of cope with that?
I think initially, especially when mask mandates came out, we had a lot of questions about that. I think now, you know, people have gotten used to wearing masks and kids have gotten used to wearing masks. It's still, you know, the recommendations are for kids 2 and up. And 2-year-olds can be difficult to do anything, including wear a mask. So, you know, practicing at home, giving small rewards. So you get to watch your iPad when you're wearing your mask, or you get a treat if you wear your mask, or you get a treat if you wear your mask when we go to the store. Like, those are all things that parents can do to give kind of positive reinforcement for following the rules. And then, surprisingly, I think we were all kind of shocked at how well most kids do. And I won't say all kids because every kid's unique, but I think also peer pressure helps a lot. If everyone else in the class has their mask on, you know, it's just the thing that they do.
And what kinds of conditions in children what might make them especially high risk for, you know, if they did contract COVID, what that would be of concern?
Sure. So any kind of underlying heart or lung disease. So this would be more than just mild asthma. So this would be kids who are on daily steroid inhalers or have been hospitalized multiple times because of their asthma, or heart conditions that they see a cardiologist for. Kids that are, you know, like small infants who've been premature. There is a risk factor of obesity. I'm not sure how much this plays into kids, but for adults it does. Underlying heart and lung disease is the main thing.
Okay. For family members who have COVID and have to isolate and quarantine, and this is for both of you, Dr. Ludke and Dr. Carroll, what are some good strategies for families, you know, if one family member has coronavirus and they're trying to quarantine at home?
Happy to hear Dr. Carroll first.
We get this question a lot. So it depends on whether you're vaccinated or not. You know, so if you're 12 and up and you are vaccinated, the CDC recommends that you don't have to quarantine, but they recommend getting tested 3 to 5 days after exposure. If you're not vaccinated, if you're at home with a family member and that family member is positive, the recommendation is that family member isolates. So that means, staying in their bedroom and using a bathroom that hopefully other family members don't have to use. This gets, of course, very tricky with small kids, right? Because you can't put a one-year-old in their room by themselves. So I think this is something that parents, that they've had difficulty with, right? Maybe identifying a single caregiver that is in charge of that sick child that can isolate with them away from other family members so that you don't pass it along.
And Dr. Ludke, any thoughts on that?
I guess the only other thing I would add, first of all, I agree with each of the points that Dr. Carroll made. I would add that we're coming into the winter again, and we are in this Delta surge now, and we're going to get past this Delta surge, but this virus loves the winter, so we're probably going to have a fair amount of cases in the winter, hopefully not nearly as bad as it was in August. And now is the time to think about it, especially if you have high-risk people at home. So start thinking it through. If you're in a nuclear family, an extended family, where maybe grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle are living with you and they're older and they have some health issues, start thinking through what will happen if you have a COVID case in the family and how you'll deal with it in that household. And don't hesitate to call your provider, your pediatrician, your primary care doctor, or call the health department, our call line, and we can help as well.
So let's get to a question here. This is an emailed question from Karen, who asks, who says, the pediatric vaccines seem headed for emergency and full FDA-approved status any day now, and the hope seems to have many more young kids vaccinated before the end of October. What does the local timeline look for Lane County families once the vaccine is approved, and how long after approval will shots be available here, and will there be drive-through clinics? Will Lane County Public Health have clinics for kids when the time comes?
I'm happy to start on this. I think Dr. Carroll and I are probably looking at some of the same data, but maybe we're looking at some different data too, and we can do this collectively. So we do expect that there'll be an approved vaccine probably by Halloween. And one of the challenges is that the vaccine for kids, for little kids, will be different than the adolescent and adult vaccine. So the Pfizer vaccine will have one-third of the dose of the adult vaccine. So what that means is many of us expect that we're going to have to fill the pipeline with a new vaccine. And I hope people remember how it was in December and January when the vaccines first came out. There was an allocation. Each state got so many doses, and then the pipeline got filled, and then we started to get more and more doses, and we could actually have mass vaccination clinics. So I expect that there will be a shortage, so to speak, at first. We won't have a light switch turned on, and there's unlimited doses for ages 5 to 11 for the COVID vaccine. And the other part is our general thinking on the public health side is, especially for the youngest age groups, you know, age 5, 6, 7 in this next group of vaccines, it's hard to do drive-through vaccination for those little ones. They're not quite as predictable in the backseat of a car. If we do a drive-through clinic, some of them, of course, are hopefully in car seats, and that's a challenging situation, you know, reaching their arm, their shoulder, getting it free around the sides of a car seat. So we're looking at more weekend clinics. We've worked with Dr. Carroll and McKenzie Pediatrics and other pediatric groups to consider that. Dr. Carroll, what are you seeing and thinking?
I think we're all trying to get – well, there's two things. First, we're getting revved up for flu shots and flu season, which for us is very similar to thinking about how to give the COVID vaccine. So most of us have some type of framework for giving, you know, extra vaccines. I think all of us are dealing with nursing shortages, and that makes this trickier. So I think as a group, you know, throughout Lane County – I think there will be a mixture of different options. So your general pediatrician, what Lane County has set up as some mass vax sites, your local pharmacy may or may not be able to give shots. It depends on, you know, whether pharmacists are comfortable and what ages they're comfortable giving vaccines. So I think we're all working on this. We don't have it quite figured out yet. And I agree with what Dr. Ludke says, you know, as soon as it's out, we may not have it the next day, but we are all very excited to get going on this.
Well, let's get to the other big exciting news, which is around the booster shots. And we've kind of gotten lots of big news about different federal, you know, recommendations. So Dr. Ludke, can you catch us up on where we're at right now?
Oh, sure. I'm happy to do so. So a week ago today, the FDA met, and we didn't have all the data on last week's radio show, but that FDA advisory committee voted no for boosters for everybody 16 and above, but voted yes for everybody 65 and above and high-risk persons. And then the system we have in this country is we go from the FDA, which approves products, whether they're drugs or vaccines, for safety and efficacy. But they don't decide how best to use that product. They just say it's safe and it's effective. But, you know, we have other immunizations. We have other things we have to work into the system. So the CDC does that. So that group met Wednesday and Thursday of this week, and they voted overnight for boosters for 65 and above. So that's everyone in that age group. People in these group homes, the long-term care facilities, skilled nursing facilities, et cetera, who typically are high-risk people, and we certainly don't want large outbreaks in those confined settings. And people age 50 to 64 with certain comorbidities, you know, a fancy word of they have some of those diseases, like Dr. Carroll was saying, that put you at a higher risk, like heart disease and lung disease. And then another group is the 18 to 49, these younger age people, 18 to 49 years old, who have some individual risks. So let's say they're on a medication for some reason that makes it harder for their immune system to work. And that's a decision that will be made by that patient and their medical provider, whether they can get a booster. The final thing that happened today was the Center for Disease Control also said that we want to include eligibility for boosters for healthcare workers and teachers and other workers at risk, like paramedics and people you know, on the front line in ambulances and such. So that's a lot of people. It was a bit tumultuous because our process involves the FDA and the CDC and their advisory groups and then final decisions. But we reached a decision with the data that we have. I think that it's a good process. It's a bit tortuous, but we got there.
This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're with Dr. Patrick Ludke with Lane County Public Health and Dr. Monique Carroll with McKenzie Pediatrics. So I'm going to get to some listener questions here. We did get a few questions regarding booster shots, Dr. Ludke, including this one from Mark, who says, actually, I'm going to go to Gladys in Springfield first, who says, I'll be 67 in January. I had my second Pfizer shot on April 3rd. I plan to get a flu shot on September 27th. Will Pfizer booster shot still help me if I get it more than 6 months after my last Pfizer dose? And should I wait after my flu shot to get a Pfizer booster?
Oh, so there's a lot in there. But the good news is the data we have shows that you can get these vaccines at the same time. So she can get them both on the same day, not have to have, you know, her life disrupted by yet another medical appointment and travel to the clinic, et cetera. So that's number one. Number two, she will be 6 months out from her first vaccine in the springtime in just a few days. She'll be eligible, and I would strongly suggest that she gets it. She's 67, so she's in that group age 65 and above. So, yes, make an appointment, get both vaccines on the same day, and do your part.
Now, Mark has this question. He says, I've read several studies have shown probable superior benefit from a boosting dose from a different vaccine formulation than the initial formulation. As folks who are 65 and therefore eligible for a third shot, what is the likelihood that such a cross-vaccination strategy might be made available to us in the near future?
I think it's a very interesting question. So in Western Europe, where these vaccines that are based on an adenovirus, it's one of the common cold viruses that we've all been infected with over our lifetime, those vaccines were given first, and then some people, due to a shortage of other vaccines, got a second dose with one of the messenger RNA vaccines, so Pfizer or Moderna, and then they tested them for antibodies, and they saw huge levels of antibodies. So we call that heterologous boost, meaning not the same boost dose as the initial prime dose. And that is entertaining. I mean, it's really interesting to take a look at that. We just don't have enough data to recommend it, especially the other way. If somebody got a Pfizer or Moderna first, can they get an adenovirus next? Will there be the same big boost? So that's just an area where we don't have enough data yet, and that data needs to be gathered.
So Ainsley wanted to know about people who are over 65, when they will be able to register for a drive-through booster appointment. So I guess the big question is, when is Lane County going to have mass vax clinics for boosters?
So we will be announcing that very soon. And by that, I mean within a few days. And those clinics will begin at the Lane Event Center. And we're looking at other sites as well. We're working again with the university. As you know, they're using their athletic facilities for many sports, so they're not widely available to us like they used to be. But working with their athletic director is showing that the facility might only be used twice a week, so the other days they've been offering it to us. Mm-hmm. So we're making those plans. So expect an announcement literally in a week or less.
So a listener named Mark, who is suffering from long COVID, had this question via email, asking about anecdotal talk about a low histamine diet coupled with taking Pepcid and Zyrtec to lessen the effects of brain fog in long COVID. And he wants to know your thoughts on this.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that he's suffering. It's unfortunate. And I'm thankful that he's looking at, you know, ways to help with his symptoms. What I would say is, there is one site in the state of Oregon that is funded and doing prospective research in the long COVID space. It's at the Oregon Health and Sciences University, OHSU. Two docs are leading that effort, Dr. Hope, and I think it's Dr. Sherman, if I remember correctly. It might be Herman. And I would strongly encourage that this caller or this person who emailed you contact OHSU and get involved in systematic research so we can learn from whatever is offered him or what he is choosing to use right now. We need to learn collectively from each other because long COVID is a real challenge.
Okay, and I'm going to play you a voicemail now.
Hi, this is Mary Ann Brown, and I live in Umpqua, and I'm curious as to why no one covers the people who have had it and gotten over it, the virus, and how that demographic is just ignored, because there is a lot of people concerned about getting it, vaccinated or not, and so that's a big concern. Why isn't there more information available to people from people who've had it and gotten over it?
What are some places she can go to get more information?
I would suggest a few for adults, and maybe Dr. Carroll can weigh in here too. So I would hope we're not ignoring it. We have done a lot of research in that space. We know some people with mild infections make very little antibody, and they're probably not protected for very long at all, and they're going to get reinfected. Other people with severe disease probably made a whole lot of antibody. They probably have some good protection. But we still want people to be vaccinated in the end after their symptoms are gone. And go to the Center for Disease Control website, cdc.gov. I would also recommend, if you want to look at a worldview, go to WHO, the World Health Organization. And then if you want a really focused down view, especially if you have a scientific bent, go to the Infectious Diseases Society of America, IDSA. And that's a whole bunch of ID docs, infectious disease docs, looking at lots of in the minutia type of data, including laboratory-based data on antibodies and T cells, cellular immunity, et cetera. Dr. Carroll, thoughts in the pediatric space?
I don't know that I have a lot to offer other than just a plug again for if you've had COVID, to still go ahead and get your COVID vaccine.
Well, Dr. Carroll, I wanted to ask you a question about sort of the overall health of kids and families. Are you talking with kids and families who are dealing with some emotional and mental challenges in terms of this kind of this pandemic time? And what are ways that you're suggesting people kind of help to stay hopeful and optimistic as we're in this, you know, again in this surge?
Sure. So I think the pandemic, and particularly for kids not being in school, for some kids, that was somewhat protective. So if school was stressful or if they were dealing with other issues of their own, I've had some kids say it was great for them. I think for a lot, and for probably most of our children, just being outside of their normal experience and not having, you know, their normal safety net, being able to see their friends, having to get used to a whole new school system, was obviously stressful for everyone. And then for some kids, the added stresses of maybe not having a secure food supply, not having secure housing, having parents that either cannot go to their jobs because they're at home trying to take care of kids. I think that was stressful for everybody. So as a baseline, everybody's anxiety level is higher. I think in addition, one of the things we've really seen in kids is the percentage of obesity has gone up immensely. And that really just it goes to the fact that they're not walking and biking to school. They're not doing PE. You know, they're relying on their parents to provide that physical activity. And we know as adults, we're not so great at that. So I think resources. First, looking at what you already have, you know, so what are your friends and family and what other resources do you have to help, you know, when you're stressed out or when your kid is stressed out? I think for a lot of kids that are dealing with more severe issues, we have a pretty beefy mental health system in town. And so if that's difficult to access, talking to your pediatrician about how to get mental health supports or talking to your school about how to access mental health supports. I think also sometimes reframing things. So I think at first in the pandemic, we all assumed that at some point we were going to get back to normal. And instead, we're getting used to what our new normal is. And sometimes embracing that and some of the good and bad things that have occurred through the pandemic. So, you know, some of the good things have been being able to spend more time with our families, you know, mm-hmm. being able to, you know, eat meals together and not be so busy. That's been great. So I think reframing that. So what are the good parts that we have out of this? And then what are the things that we need to work on can be very helpful.
Okay. Well, I'm so sorry. We're running out of time. Thank you so much, Dr. Monique Carroll and Dr. Patrick Ludke. Thanks for joining us on the Friday show.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel.